Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You are listening to us a little bit earlier on a Saturday on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. This is the radio show that we normally do at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. So if you are listening to this live, you realize that we're usually not here at 3 p.m. Eastern. But we're doing this because Scott Johnson has a guest, and I'll explain that in just a second. But one of the things we've done over the last couple of years, I think it's been actually last couple of 8 years, so I think eight is a little bit more than a couple. So we have been here on Building Fortunes Radio on Saturday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, where we discuss different and various things related to home-based businesses, including, of course, network marketing. And the way this whole thing got started, and I'm going to kind of keep my introduction somewhat short because we have this guest host, but for those people that might be listening in, I built Building Fortunes Radio to be a platform where we can pass the microphones around to people talking about things that happen in home-based businesses. So in the MLM world, it seems like there's a camp of people that are pro-MLM, there's a totally separate camp that are anti-MLM, and they are two distinct divisions. And unfortunately, that's not the way life works. Many times there's good things about something, there's bad things about something, and I built Building Fortunes Radio because I wanted to talk about the stuff associated with that. So I did a radio show with a gentleman named Roger Van Vlissingen, and Roger's a real good guy, very smart, and an anti-MLM critic. Or anti-MLM, either one. He doesn't really think MLM could be done the right way. And he's one of the smart ones. Like, there's a lot of anti-MLM guys out there that are just basically always stupid and or dumb. And that is something that for those people on the inside who probably know what I mean. But the reality is that after that radio show we did with Roger, Scott Johnson called me up and he said, "Hey, Peter, there's something that a lot of people aren't talking about. And it was associated with MLM." And I said, "What's that, Scott?" And he said, "The tools scam." And that led me to ask some questions of what he was referencing. And because of my previous background with Amway specifically, I thought that maybe he was talking about the same thing I was talking about. So when I asked him, "Do you have a website, Scott, while we're talking, I could look at it?" And he said, "I sure do. It's stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com. And that's when I knew that I was thinking and talking about the same thing that he was talking about, referencing some kind of a tool scam. So we started doing these radio shows. What I did not know is how much Scott has researched the tools scam, especially associated with Amway. I can convincingly, confidently say Scott Johnson is the world's biggest researcher on the Amway tool scam, and continuous researcher for sure. There's been a lot of people that have studied it and done even some movies on it. I think Sean Munger did a good job on this stuff as well. But Scott's on top of it all the time, like currently. And I said, "Well, I don't know how much we'll be able to talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about other things as well." And we've been doing that ever since. So if you go back to, again, Scott's website, which he's going to tell you in a second, you'll be able to hear this and the previous radio shows. And Scott's got a really cool website with a lot of different links on it as well. But I want to give our guest speaker as much attention as he deserves. For those people that will be calling in at 8:30 tonight, we're not there. We're here early, so sorry about that. This happened kind of last minute. And Scott Johnson, thanks for being here on your own radio show. Oh, shoot. I muted out the wrong guy. Oops.
Hear me now?
There you go, Scott. I'm sorry. I muted out the wrong guy.
No problem. Yeah, I wanted to thank our guest, too, because he works evenings and he was willing to come on here in the mid-afternoon. So thank you, Justin. And I will follow up a little bit, Peter, try to keep this short again, because I have talked to Justin in the past. I want to give him as much time as we possibly can here. And you brought up the tool scam. And so we try to cover this at the beginning of every show just to give the new listeners an idea of what we're talking about. And so in Amway particularly, and it happens in some other MLMs as well, I don't think to the extent that it occurs in Amway, but the top-level distributors, they sell different things to their downline for training and motivation. And these include things like meetings, books, recordings, phone apps, website access, voicemail, all kinds of things. And they actually end up making multiple times more from the tools than they do from Amway. And I can say that confidently because I've found over the years different people that got kicked out of Amway, and they post how much they were making or how much their downline was making from the tools when they were in Amway. Now, they won't talk about it while they're in for a pretty obvious reason. Most people would probably quit if they told them, oh, yeah, I'm making, you know, 10 times more from the tools that you guys are buying than I am from Amway. That just tells you they're really in the tool business, and the Amway business is just sort of the bait, right? It's a bait and switch operation. So they really don't talk about it while they're in, at least very much. I did find one recording by Bill Britt years ago. It was actually on a cassette tape, and he talked about they make about as much money from the tools as they do from Amway. And that's the first and only time I've ever heard that on a recording. And so they do make money, but it's not as much. It's multiple times as much. And so, you know, even Bill Britt was lying about the amount of money that they were making from the tools. And so let me go ahead and give my Facebook page so that you can actually see the examples that I've found over the years. And see for yourself, because it's not me making these claims. It's these former Amway high-level IBOs, independent business owners. They used to call them distributors or IBOs now. And that way you can see for yourself, because I'm just a guy on a show and I could say anything I wanted to. But if you see it in writing, you can actually go to, for example, there was a fellow by the name of Brig Hart who gave an interview to a Salt Lake City media outlet, and you can go right to that outlet and see the interview. You can read what he said. And what he said essentially was, when I was in Amway, I was making almost $1 million a year from Amway, and I was making $8 to $10 million a year from the tools. So that's an example of those people, you know, speaking up after they got kicked out, of course, not while they were in. So if you go to facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson, ScottTexJohnson, all one word, you'll see I've got three websites there. I've got, like you mentioned, Peter, the link to this radio show, my YouTube. I have a Rumble, and I highly encourage people to go to the Rumble author that says that is text. It's T-E-X-T-E-X altogether. And you'll see about a 9-minute speech that Joe Markowitz, who I believe is a former IBO AI, and what that is sort of the representation of all of the IBOs towards the company Amway. It's their representatives, so to speak. And he was recently the chairperson of that organization. He's been replaced recently, but he was the chairperson. But he gives a 9-minute speech, and twice during that 9 minutes, he said, the sole reason, this is his words, the sole reason that we have tools is to help new IBOs become successful and have a sustainable, profitable business. He doesn't mention that he makes several times more from the tools. He just says the sole reason we have tools. And so you can make your decision how you want based on that. I would label him as a liar. That's my conclusion. He's a big fat liar. Actually, he's not fat, but he is a liar. But anyway, that's another link that's on my Facebook page. I think I mentioned my YouTube channel. That link is on there. My email, my phone number. If you want to talk about something or, you know, write me about something in my email, it's all there. Everything is available on that Facebook page. So that's what I refer to as the Amway tool scam. And I believe that that's RICO fraud. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I believe it's RICO fraud. It's at least business fraud, because I know my upline encouraged us to refer to them to prospects as teammates and business partners. And I can't imagine a teammate or business partner that would leave out that little detail that they're really not in the Amway business. Well, they are in the Amway business, but they're much, much more in the tool scan business. Now, what makes it a tool scam, in my view, is not that they're making money from it. It's that they're making money from it and not talking about it, that they are making most of their money from it. That's what makes it a scam. I have no problem with someone making money as long as they're upfront and transparent. That's not a problem, not in my view. But we'll talk about that a little bit more, too, because I know our guest has a little different view on that, and I'm okay with different views, by the way. No one has to think exactly the same in my book. If you have a different opinion, great. That's fine with me. We just want to get our ideas out there and let people make decisions. So that's one problem. The other big problem in MLM in general, because like I said, not all MLMs have tool scams. Amway does, Herbalife does, there's probably some others. I've never studied it real carefully because it's kind of murky anyway to figure out what's going on. But the other big problem that is either universal or nearly universal in MLMs is the lack of retail sales. And when I say retail sale, we're talking about selling the product or service, you know, whatever the MLM is offering, to people who are not part of the MLM compensation plan. You could call them customers. But it's not your downline, right? It's not someone that is part of the compensation plan. It's someone that's outside of the business as a customer. And there's no federal law that defines what the minimum is. But when Vima and Herbalife coincidentally both happened to settle with the FTC back in 2016, they both came to basically a 50-50 split. In other words, if you have at least 50% of your products or services going to customers, people who are not part of the MLM compensation plan, then you're a legitimate MLM. If it's less than 50%, then you're an illegal pyramid. And that was the settlements that both companies had. Now, the Herbalife one is a little bit more complicated because there's a sliding scale. But if you go to the middle of that sliding scale, it's 50%. Vima was 51% minimum customer volume in order to stay in business. That was the legal settlements they had. They didn't go to trial, but they did, you know, both sides agreed to this. You know, both the MLMs and the FTC drew that line basically at 50% minimum. You can always exceed it, but you have to have at least half going to customers. So that's the other big problem, and that's an illegal pyramid. That's something that a lot of people, whether they're pro or anti-MLM, they really don't understand what the definition of a pyramid is. And so that is the definition, okay? Now, again, it's not law, but that is sort of the backdrop of how I define what an illegal pyramid is. A lot of times you'll hear people say, well, we have products. We can't be a pyramid. However, the FTC has shut down several MLMs over the years that have products for being illegal pyramids. So that argument doesn't wash either. So anyway, those are the two big things, right? Tool scams, lack of retail sales. So I'll stop there because we do want to get our guest on here as soon as we can. His name is Justin Rodriguez. And Justin, I just wanted to welcome you to the show, first of all. Thanks for being here. Thanks for telling your story. And if you can just start out by telling us and the audience a little bit about yourself, you know, who you are, what you do, how you were approached by Amway in the beginning, and just sort of give people an idea of how you got started several years ago at this point. And go right ahead. And again, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. My name is Justin Rodriguez. I am from Cleveland, Ohio, married. Me and my wife have four kids. And, yeah, pretty busy. In the evenings, I am a bartender. Been doing that for maybe 13 years or so. Definitely like to sing the drinks, but in 2014, my sponsor, who then I knew her through friends, so we didn't really know each other outside of, you know, having mutual friends. But we were friends on Instagram. And I was really big into positive motivation, posting, you know, positive things on social medias and things of that nature. So one day she would like all my posts. And so one day she sent me a message, pretty much asked me if I was interested in, you know, opportunity to make more money. And, you know, of course, at that time, you know, I was single at that time. So I didn't have nothing to do but work. So being young, single male, I was hungry to make more money. So, of course, I said, yeah. And that's how I got started. That's how I got hooked into the business, you know, looking for an opportunity to make more money. And, you know, that's how they hook people into the business, through social medias predominantly. And so, yeah, so 2014 till about 2016 when I met my wife, I was in Amway. And she was in another multi-level marketing business for a short period of time. So when I started talking about Amway, she was kind of familiar. She just didn't know Amway, but she understood the multi-level marketing industry.
You recall which MLM she was in?
I think it was I don't know. It was a small multi-level.
Okay, not a well-known name, maybe.
Yeah, no, it was not well-known.
Gotcha. Let me ask you a quick question. Which motivational people were you following even before you knew Amway existed?
So I would follow Eric Thomas and you know, kind of just, you know, different motivational pages online. So before I even got approached, I'd never heard of Amway, although I had heard of other, like Mana V. I heard of Mana V. I've been approached by some people about joining Mana V a few years ago, and even I guess Cutco would be considered a multi-level marketing business. I was not aware of Amway prior to, you know, my sponsor introducing me.
And were you exposed to those other companies before Amway or after you were in Amway?
Before.
Okay. And what was the reason for not joining them, even though you joined Amway?
It was just not something I understood really well at the time. And yeah, just at that time, I wasn't didn't know about it, so I wasn't interested in it.
Gotcha. It's interesting you brought up Mona V because I think I mentioned them a few minutes ago, a guy by the name of Brig Hart that I was quoting. He actually left Amway. He was, it's a long story. They took away his tool money and he sued Amway and his upline and so forth. But anyway, he joined Mona V, and that interview that he gave to the Salt Lake City media outlet, he was basically saying, Mona V pays so much better bonuses that I don't have to, and these are my words, not his, I don't have to scan my downline anymore on tools. And that's where he talked about, I was making almost $1 million a year from Amway and $8 to $10 million a year from the tools. That's the most extreme example I've uncovered, you know, as far as a multiplying factor of 10 or more, actually more than 10. So it's interesting that you bring up Mona V and a lot of other people that got kicked out. I know Orrin Woodward and his group in 2007, which is before your time in Amway, They also went to Mona V, I believe, for a while, and then they went somewhere else. They've been to two or three other places. But, yeah, back in that time frame, Mona V was a hot commodity. They've since, I think, been swallowed up by, I can't remember if it's Longevity or somebody, but they no longer exist as a separate company.
Yeah.
Cutco does. Cutco's still out there doing the knife and kitchen utensil thing. But, yeah, sorry to interrupt. I was just really fascinated by, you know, you being approached by other companies and, you know, what was different about Amway. Maybe you were just, you know, in a different place, or maybe that friend that you knew. Let me ask you another question. Did you know the other people that approached you from Mona V or Cutco, or were they more strangers?
They were more well, with Mona V, I was working at Home Depot, and if you've ever been at Home Depot, you see the guy or gal who sits next to the furnaces, and they sell the furnaces. They're almost like a third-party company that works inside of Home Depot. Well, he was working that and selling furnaces for Home Depot. And, you know, just holding conversations with him daily, you know, and he would pick my brain and vice versa. And he kind of, you know, invited me out to one of their meetings one evening. And so that was that.
So you kind of knew him a little bit, not real well.
Yeah,
but you knew him
a little bit. Yeah. I didn't know him outside of work. So, you know, I trusted him enough as being a nice guy. So, you know, I kind of gave him a chance, you know, and just checked it out. I will say about with Amway, why I really got started with Amway was because right up to the point of being approached by my sponsor, I was just working a lot, and, you know, I was kind of at a crossroad in my life where it was like, you know, I don't really have a college education. I don't really have a career set. So for me, it was like I have to self-educate and, you know, I was all about self-improvement. So I started, you know, kind of reading self-improvement books and this and that. So when I seen Amway and I seen their education side, you know, I had already started reading some of those first-year books that they give you, well, that they don't give you, that they recommend to you. So for me, it was like I'm already reading some of these books. You know, so that was kind of a pull for me at the
time.
Yeah,
kind of fit right in, exactly.
Fit right in.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, yeah. And I think that pre-existing friendship helps too, because I know when I joined Amway, it was somebody that I knew at work, and so, you know, I knew him, he knew me. There was some trust there, and so I think that is an ingredient. Not that a perfect stranger can't sponsor somebody, but, you know, I think when you have, you know, whether it's a friend or a relative, some pre-existing relationship, it makes it easier. And I'll have to tell you this, too, just to make the point, because you said he's a nice guy. Most people in Amway and probably other MLMs are nice guys. They really are. It's only that top layer, I call it the layer of scum at the top, that know what they're doing. You know, they're the only ones that really know that they're making multiple times more from tools. They're the only ones that know if you don't have legitimate retail sales, you're an illegal pyramid. Most people that get in MLMs have no idea of these things, and they shouldn't be expected to know because MLM is brand new to them. And so it's really only that top layer that I see as the evildoers, so to speak. Most people in Amway and other MLMs are just really good, upstanding people that are just trying to do what they're being told. That at least that's how I did it. And so, you know, this is not, we're not trying to condemn the entire distributor force here. You know, that's not the intent, because they're not really the ones that are doing these things. It's really just that top layer and the companies, quite frankly,
the companies know what should be happening, and they're aware of what's really happening. And so that's who I put the blame on, is that very upper layer, typically is Diamonds and Above in Amway, and then the executives from the Amway Corporation. Because even most of the Amway employees don't have a clue, right? They're working on the production line, or they're doing whatever, research. You know, they don't know all this stuff that's going on, typically, I think. So, yeah, I try to focus on who I know is aware, and they're not doing things the right way. And you mentioned those books that they would recommend to you. I'm pretty sure LTD does the same as my upline. I was under Jaeger. They sell the books for the full cover price, even though mm-hmm. when they buy multiple cases of books, and you can check this out at any bookstore, you know, see what one book is and then say, hey, what if I bought a case? Or what if I bought 10 cases of books? How much would they cost? And they'll probably tell you about a third or a fourth of the cover price. And so the upline is cleaning up on everything, including the books. Just want to point that out. There's a lot of profit there. That's why these people are making multiple times more from the tools than they are from Amway. And, of course, unlike Amway, only the very top layer gets paid the profit from the tools, whereas in Amway, every level gets paid, right, based on the volume in your own organization. And so it's not shared like that for the tools. It all goes to the top. Versus being spread out through the organization. So anyway, I'll let you continue, but this has been a fascinating discussion so far. So you were involved for, you said a couple years, and then you kind of backed off because you got married and your kids and all that kind of stuff, but you were still an IBO, right?
Yeah, so I met my wife in 2016. We started dating. And then I decided, you know, Amway was just, it wasn't working for me, you know, and I was dishing out more money than I was making from it. And so, you know, I just decided to step away and just focus more on my relationship with you know, we were dating at the time. And then in 2020, we got married, and in May, that's when my sponsor reached out to me. You know, she's like, hey, you know, I noticed, you know, you're still an active IBO, you know, and just kind of want to see what's going on, you know, want to invite you over to me and Chris's house. You know, we don't live too far from you now. We actually moved closer to Cleveland area. So, you know, I went over to, you know, just kind of, you know, say hi, you know, check out their new house, this and that, our apartment. And, you know, one thing led to another, and, you know, I re-registered my LTD business, and got started back with the group. And then, you know, that was 2020. And then last summer, you know, my upline kind of, you know, thing kind of went haywire in the organization, and he got kicked out. And things didn't really sit well with me how, you know, things were unfolding and how other IBOs and his downline were treating him. And to me, you know, it just didn't sit well with me coming from a family-oriented background, you know. And, you know, on stage they talk about, you know, we do this for life, and we're, you know, they talk about loyalty and they talk about brotherhood. And I just didn't see that brotherhood show up to, you know, to my upline. And everybody turned their back on him. So, yeah, my wife, yeah, when I, you know, I took her to a few conferences, she was not sold on Amway. She believed that, you know, every time she heard somebody popping an excess can open, you know, they were just making money off of off of everybody. And, you know, I didn't want to believe it at the time coming from her. But come to find out after talking to my upline, Judd, about some things that they were doing, they were actually selling excess cans at conferences to keep an organization in diamond qualification.
Interesting.
Or in platinum qualification.
Interesting. Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
If I could back up a little bit real quick. So when you first started in 2014, you were a bartender, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So that's really interesting because bartenders obviously work evenings, but Amway does a lot of their business in the evening. So how were you able to reconcile that as far as you're working in the evening and so you're not really available to show the marketing plan or do, you know, other things like follow-ups and so forth. But then you can't really do much during the day because everyone else is working. So how did you make that time schedule conflict work out?
So my main thing was to make sure that I had Thursday nights off, which was our info session nights where we could invite people out and they could see the plan. So that was my biggest thing was, you know, if I can get people to the info session, I don't have to book as many appointments throughout the week. If I can just book people into Thursday nights. And then Sunday nights was our team meeting nights. Every Sunday we would meet at a sponsor's house and we would just, you know, make phone calls or send social media messages out to people in our network, in our social media networks. And so I really just tried to utilize those 2 days to really grow the business. And if I had anybody, you know, my sponsor's like, well, if you have anybody during the week, let me know and, you know, I'll do the meeting with them for you.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's very creative. Now, the Sundays, were those earlier in the day, or did you take Sunday off, too, so that you could attend the Sunday meetings?
Yeah, I rearranged my schedule to have Thursdays and Sundays off.
Gotcha. And how many total people did you ever sponsor, and how many were in at any given time, you know, the maximum number in your downline?
So I didn't really sponsor many people. I probably sponsored maybe 5 to 10 people personally, and then I maybe had, you know, about 20 people in my downline at a time.
Well, that's more than me. So it's actually probably more than most people, because most people don't sponsor anybody, right? So the fact – so you were what, at least a 2,500 pin?
Yep.
Okay. Very good. I just wanted to make those couple of comments. Go ahead and continue with your experience and so forth.
So yeah. So I do remember, you know, being early on in the business and talking to people at work. I remember talking to this guy. And he's like, I had an excess at work. And he's like, I know what that is. I'm like, oh, you know about Amway? He's like, no, it was Amway. I guess Amway changed their name in the early 2000s. I guess they were going through some type of legal battle, and they changed the company name.
Yeah, they did. It was back in 1999. I don't think there was anything particular going on. I think they just decided this Amway is getting worn out. Let's change it to Quickstar.
Quickstar.
That was only in North America. Okay, that was not around the world. It was only United States and Canada. They were Quickstar until around 2005. They announced. And by the way, when they announced this, it's the only thing that I can recall ever that they did not check with the IBO AI board prior to the announcement. and they announced it to everybody simultaneously, hey, we're going back to Amway. And it was about a two-year period between 2005 and 2007 where – or no, excuse me, this was from 2007 to 2009. They announced it in 2007, and then in 2009 – that was the end of the two-year transition, because what they would do is rebrand it by, you know, putting Quickstar on top and then Amway on the bottom, and then they put Amway on the top and Quickstar on the bottom, and then it became just Amway. That was the two-year period mm-hmm. where they did that transition. But yeah, they were known as Quickstar during those that time frame. And Peter, did you have any comments or questions for Justin?
Nope, I'm good so far. You guys can continue.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and continue, Justin.
So I brought that up because when I found out about the Quickstar name, you know, I went to my upline and I asked about it, and my upline's wife kind of was like, oh, well, maybe we should we have this conversation with him? And my upline was like, no, we'll wait. So for me, that was kind of like the first red flag, and I was just kind of like, why, what is the big secret, you know, like what's going on? So then I kind of started doing my own research at this point about, you know, about Amway, and started kind of, you know, looking up, you know, I guess the past and this and that, and, you know, finding out different lawsuits and with Amway. And so that was, you know, that was the first red flag. And so I kind of ignored it, you know, and it was just kind of in the back of my mind always.
That's interesting. So when they kind of evaded the question, that made you more curious. If they had just answered it, maybe mm-hmm. you would have said, okay, no big deal, I'll just move on,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That really is interesting how that dynamic worked out. Now, I'm aware that some groups, and I don't think they're doing it anymore, but for a few years after 2009, they were still using the Quickstar name, you know, when they were doing their recruiting and so forth. They stayed away from the Amway name for, I think, several years after 2009. I think that was the Worldwide Dream Builder group that did that. I might be mistaken.
Okay.
But, yeah, there was definitely a lot of tension, let's say, when Amway announced that in 2007 that they were going to go back to Amway without any heads up, you know, to the people, you know, like Larry Winters, who was still is the head of LTD, there was a lot of hate and discontent because it really blindsided the very top layer of distributors, of IBOs that normally at least get informed that something's going to happen, right? Because the IBO AI does not have control over Amway, but they do work together, coordinate things, get feedback, you know, back and forth in both directions, but they're not over Amway. They're just sort of, you know, kind of on the side, and they normally do coordinate things. Now, I have to say they coordinate things, but the bottom line is they hate each other's guts. The upper-level distributors hate Amway. Amway hates them, but they both need each other. That's, you know, that's the bottom line. And so there's always tension. But, you know, in public they play nice and smile and all that. But I can guarantee you behind the scenes there is really deep hatred between the two groups. So it's not what would you call a functional relationship. It's dysfunctional. But again, they need each other, and that's why they continue. So anyway, I'll just let you continue.
So yeah, so when I went to conference with my wife, and you know, and I was telling you about, you know, the camp's popping, and she's like, that's just money to them. That's just, and I was like, no. Come to find out it was, and that was just, you know, another red flag. And, you know, and I look back and I'm like, you know, there were more red flags that I chose to ignore because, you know, they try to fill you up with, you know, just pay attention to all the positives and none of the negatives, you know, while you're with them. And if you walk away from the organization, you know, it's as if they've never met you and they have no desire to know you again. You know, that was like, that was another red flag. When I walked away, you know, in 2016, you know, but no one reached out to me. No one spoke to me. No one, you know, ever looked out to see how, if I was okay. Excuse me. You might know it as Jacobs Field. But I was working for the Cleveland Indians, bartending, and come to find out, a lot of, the group that I was a part of went to a game, and maybe there was probably maybe like 15 to 20 of them. One person came and said hi to me, and they all knew I was working there. And one person came in and said hi, you know, and so that was like, you know, like when you're in and you're a part of the club, you know, they love you or they say they love you. But when you're not in, it's complete opposite. And so, like, for me, that was just, you know, that was enough for me to say, you know, this isn't a genuine opportunity. This isn't a genuine group of people. You know, they want me to build the business so that they can do well. They don't want me to build the business so that I can do well. Or so, you know, it's not true friendship.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, at that time, you were not participating in all the meetings and the tools and everything, right? But
right.
Were you still officially an IBO? Were you buying products occasionally, or, you know, what was your involvement at that level?
Yeah, so I would buy the laundry detergent. That was the only reason why I really kept I kept it active just in case, you know. I was like, you know, if I want to go back, you know, I wouldn't have to really, you know, pay for a whole new renewal to get started again. But yeah, I would buy laundry detergent here and there. But I was by myself, you know, and you know, it was probably the best bet for me.
Right. Yeah. We used to buy the. I can't remember if it was 50 or I think it was a 50-pound box of SA8 laundry detergent, and we had a family of four, you know, unlike you, a single guy, but that laundry detergent would last forever because it was concentrated, and you just take a little scoop of it, you know, each laundry load. I imagine you did not buy the 50-pound box, right?
No, not buy the 50-pound box, but it did. It lasted me a while, so that was my reason.
And we like
the
laundry detergent.
It's funny because the tool thing, you know, when you get in, they tell you, oh, you know, this is just going to cost you, you know, about $200 to get your business started up and running. But they don't tell you about the $65 a month. You know, LTD reoccurring payment you have to pay every month. Yeah, they don't tell you that up front, you know, and that's something they encourage after you get signed up.
Right. In fact, we had a guest on, I think it's been a few months now, Peter, but she was telling us, I'm pretty sure this is LTD. It could have been Worldwide Dream Builders, but I thought it was LTD, that they were paying $220 a month. And that's just to listen to the audio recordings. That does not include all these conferences and all these other extra meetings or books or anything else. It's just the ability to listen to the audio recordings. Over $200 a month. Incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah, the thing that, you know, kind of struck me about that was, you know, if you didn't pay for it 1 month, you didn't have access to the audio that you already purchased.
Wow, interesting.
Yep. So if you didn't pay for your LTD subscription, you know, you could have spent thousands of dollars prior to that month on audios,
that you do not have access to because they cut your LTD off.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, because, you know, back in the when I was at Amway, which was from starting in 1993, we had cassette tapes, and then we went to CDs. Now you guys just have the electronic downloads, you know, on your phone or whatever. So it's definitely even more profitable than it was back then because, you know, there's no physical things. You know, there's no shipping charges. There's no paying for a physical item. So it's almost pure profit now. You know, it's incredible, you know, how incredibly profitable it is for these guys. And Justin, we talked a few days ago about, you know, this whole tool profit area. And you were telling me something that I've heard before from other people, so it didn't surprise me. But if you can just share what you told me a few days ago about, you know, the people in Amway, you know, the distributors, not the Amway Corporation, but the distributors making all this money on the motivational stuff, because I think it's a valid approach. It's a valid position.
I'm trying to think what was it that was that I had mentioned to you.
Yeah, basically you were saying, you know, all these other people that do motivation for a living, you know, outside of Amway.
Oh yeah.
They get paid. Yeah, go ahead and take it from there.
Yeah. I remember. So you know, my thought, yeah, behind, you know, paying for I guess the audios and, you know, going to the conferences was, you know, other people outside of the businesses, you know, that are just motivational speakers, they're charging, you know, $1,000 to come to their conference, like let's say Grant Cardone or, you know, Eric Thomas or, you know, Inky Johnson, you know, they charge people, you know, hundreds, thousands of dollars to come. So for me, it was like, you know, if I'm paying a portion of that to go, you know, learn about the business, you know, and hear, you know, from, you know, people who are successful, to me it was, I didn't really see it as a big deal, you know, because if I wasn't in the business, you know, I probably maybe would go spend, you know, a couple $100 to go listen to Eric Thomas speak, or, you know, if I was in real estate, I would go, you know, check Grant Cardone's conference out. So it wasn't really a big deal. You know, and yeah. since you know, saying that to you, and I've been thinking about it ever since, and it was like, honestly, every conference is the same. They say the same thing. I have notebooks of the same rhetoric that I've copied from them speaking on stage, you know? So it's almost like listening to the same audio on repeat, you know? And
yeah,
they just call it a different conference, a different year.
Yeah, I think that was Peter's impression when he joined Amway three times because he was trying to learn more about MLM, and he very quickly found out that it's the same stuff over and over. Now, the way I look at it, and, of course, my upline told me this too, but the way I looked at it was, you know, the recordings, you know, the cassettes or electronic, whatever it is, the recordings and the meetings being repetitive aren't so much for you. They're really for the new people because they have not heard it multiple times. And that kind of makes sense to me. Now, the issue I had with the tools, you know, besides being repetitive, is that if you go to a Grant Cardone, or I think you mentioned Les Brown to me also on the earlier discussion we had, for those people, you normally go to them once, right? Now, you might go to them twice every, you know, a few years apart or something, but you're not going to go and see them four times a year like you do your uplines, you know, major functions. And so there's that repetitive element also that I think is – it makes it worse, put it that way. And then you know that the Grant Cardones and the whoever else, motivational, you know, Les Brown, whoever, you know that that's how they make their living. And so it's not really a big deal to me to pay to go listen to those people. If that's what you want to do, and I'm a big believer in motivation as well, then that's fine. But you're not doing that every 3 months or every 4 months. I'm hearing the same thing. You know, and you're also, you know that they're making their money that way. It's really not a mystery. Whereas with Amway, everything I always heard from my upline, it was Amway, Amway, Amway. That's how I got my lifestyle. And they never said, I make most of my money from these functions and these books and these recordings and so on and so forth. So that's the issue I've always had with what I call the Amway tool scam. A question for you. Did you ever see Les Brown in person at an Amway major function?
I have not.
Okay, because I have. I think on more than one occasion, I was just curious if he was still doing the circuit, you know, the Amway circuit. Did you ever have someone kind of well-known on the outside come in and give the motivational speech? Or sometimes it was, former Olympic champion, gold medalist. We had the guy that is the story behind what's that movie, the one with Notre Dame?
Rudy?
Rudy. We had the actual Rudy guy, the real person, come in, and he's a motivational speaker as well, and did a bang-up job. I really enjoyed it because that's a real story. You know, there was a real guy that actually did what's in the movie, and we were able to see him live telling his real story that is kind of repeated in the movie. We've seen some incredible, Olympic gold medalists and people like Rudy, Les Brown, all kinds of people like that that came in from the outside to do motivation. Do you recall any of those kinds of speakers that LPD brought in?
So they've had, I think the biggest name that I seen that they brought in was Coach K from Duke.
Yeah.
So they brought in Inky Johnson, Coach K, Jocko Willink 1 year. They bring these people in as motivational speakers. It's also another way to, keep people in the business. They use these speakers as as if they have some type of a reputation with them.
Yeah, they use them for credibility.
Credibility.
What I say.
Yep.
That's how I phrase that. Yeah. It shows that we really are good people.
We're reputable.
I just wish that these outside speakers knew about what's going on, and I wonder if they do or they don't. I tend to think they do not know, because most of them seem like pretty decent people. And I've also seen Larry Winter's Facebook page, and he goes way back with Coach K. The Duke former basketball coach. But he was and still is a living legend. I can't think of anyone, maybe except John Wooden, that I would put above Coach K as far as a college football coach. Basketball coach. He's top notch. No doubt. So, they really do. I think they use those people. I certainly hope those people are not aware of what's going on, stuff we're talking about right now. It would really be a downer for me. but I wish they did more due diligence too,
I'm sure, they're getting paid, handsomely to go to these conferences and speak. So, maybe they don't care to maybe know what's going on because of how much they're probably getting paid anyways.
Yeah, they're probably, you know, kind of shielded from all that information, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone like Larry Winters is not going to tell them, yeah, we're scaling everybody, you know.
Yeah.
That's not something that he would want to share with Coach K or anyone else for that matter. But, yeah, you just named some really well-known people that, again, lend credibility to whether it's LTD or Jaeger or Worldwide Dream Builders, whoever it is, they get more credibility, you know, with the downline. And that's the whole goal there. Let me ask you about your experience and maybe your roots experience, since you had up to 20 people at one time. With retail sales, did your upline do what my upline did and basically told us to manipulate the computer to make a portion of our personal sales show up as retail sales?
Exactly what was going on. When they get you in the business, they host these parties for you, and you can invite your friends and family, mostly family, and, you know, they ask their family, you know, hey, will you support, you know, Justin, you know, as he gets his business started? And initially, of course, they all say yeah, because they're family. And that's how you get your first sales in the business. And after that, you know, I think most people are like, you know, these products cost, you know, they cost too much to, you know, to buy every month, you know, so after that, most people are buying their products and then transferring their sales, their personal sales to customer sales. And I think, you know, when you brought up the was it Herbalife and their compensation plan, and they had to change how much they were actually selling. You know, Amway did it as well. You know, so we had to sell, I think it was 70% of our sales had to be customer sales and 30% had to be personal. And so all people were doing was just, you know, creating, you know, more or transferring more of their personal sales to customer sales. Most people are buying their products. They're not really selling.
Right. And how were you told to do that? As far as, did you just like make somebody up, or did you have a friend or relative? Because I've heard a couple different flavors.
Me personally, I did both.
Okay.
I did both. Or you would just create a guest. I used my mom, and she had an account, so I just transferred to her account. I remember the first time they were like, well, you know, all you need is five more, you know, to reach your bonus bracket, you know, blah blah blah. They're like, well, you can just transfer some sales, and that was like, transfer? You know, I kind of questioned it, like, what? And that was a thing, you know, and they don't tell you that up front. They don't tell you that initially, you know, and that's just, I guess, one of the loopholes that they use, you know, that they don't tell you about, you know, and I guess it's unethical, you know, it's not an honest business. It's not, you know, it's not real business. You're selling to yourself and you're claiming you're making a customer sale.
And this was all done on the computer, right? Because the other,
mm-hmm.
I was never taught this, but I have heard that another technique that's used is you actually have the products shipped, like to your mom. They would be shipped to your mom with her address, you know, her name, her credit mm-hmm. card, and then you would go over to her house, assuming she lived nearby, and go pick up the products and give her a check to make up for the credit card bill that she's going to get. That's the other technique that I've heard of as far as creating these false customer sales.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we talked about this before, but back when Orrin Woodward got kicked out and he filed a lawsuit against Amway, he put out information that was in a confidential study that Amway had a third party do. And the basic question to the third party was, how much retail sales do we have? And it came back as 3.4%, which is, of course, a little bit less than 50 and much closer to zero. But I was surprised that it was that low, because so many of us were being taught to, you know, come up with these false retail sales. And the Amway rule, by the way, is 50 PV as far as to allow you to be paid your downline volume bonus. You had to have at least 50 PV. Mm-hmm. That 70% you mentioned in the Amway rules, I'm not saying, you know, you weren't taught this. I'm just saying the Amway rules state that you have to either sell or use 70% of the products that you order in a given month. And that's really intended to be an anti-inventory rule. You've probably heard the term garage qualified, you know, where people just pile up products mm-hmm. to get to the next pin. And that 70% rule in Amway is intended to, you know, if not prevent it, at least minimize the occurrence of, you know, overbuying the products just to make the next pin. That's the intent there. That's what we've heard from many, many other people, Peter, on this show over the years. Yes, I was taught how to cheat as far as making up retail sales. And I think of two stories we've had guests in the past. One was a woman who was living in Las Vegas at the time, going to college. She got recruited into Amway, got talked into moving up to Washington State. And, you know, she went up there to be near the Worldwide Dream Builders headquarters. And she said, yeah, my family actually supported my Amway business. And for the first month or two, they would buy products from me. But after that, they said, we'd love to support you, but these are way too expensive. We're not, you know, kind of what you said, Justin, you know, we're not going to continue this because they're just really expensive. And the other example, this is one that just tickles me every time I think about it. We've had Megan Lanahan on here three times, and during one of her visits, she relayed a story. She used to be in LTD also. She relayed a story to me that she was at a team meeting one time, and she had actually legitimately, okay, make sure you're sitting down, she legitimately had 80 PV of customer sales. Now, she only did it one time, but she did it. She averaged around 20, I think, is what she said. But this one time she had 80, and she was, you know, recognized at this big team meeting as being this superstar retailer. And you would think, you know, if the minimum is 50 and she did 80, well, that is exceeding the minimum, but not by that much. It wasn't like she had 2,000 PV, right? Mm-hmm. She just exceeded the minimum, so to speak, the theoretical minimum. And she was held up like a conquering hero. And I'm tickled every time I think about that story about how exceeding just a little bit the minimum, you're just a rock star. Little retail sales are going on, right? I mean,
they
legitimate
do that.
Retail.
They look for the smallest things. If you do something good one time, they will prop you up on stage and make it seem like you've done it, you know, your whole career with Amway. And you know, they definitely inflate numbers. They exaggerate stories for the new people. Because once I realized, you know, like, that's not true what they're saying, or that's a little fabricated. That didn't happen like that, you know. Those were, you know, just more red flags, you know, going off for me, they're not really being totally honest.
Yeah, it's only, I think, on the back end when you realize what's going on, you know, and like we've been talking about, you know, my two big things are the tool scam and the lack of retail sales. Once you understand that those are real things, then all these red flags pop up. You know, your memory of all these little experiences that you know, were not a big thing at the time, all of a sudden you're like, wow, that's what that really meant, right?
Yeah.
But it didn't mean anything while it was happening because you didn't know about these other things yet. And so, you know, that's why I try to tell people, look, don't blame yourself, because all of us that were in Amway, you know, that were lied to, we didn't know at the time we were being lied to. We didn't know that we were promoting basically an illegal business. Most people wouldn't do that. It's just the fact that the information that we should have been provided, we were not provided, and therefore we thought it was legitimate at the time. It's only when we learn more about what was really happening and look back on it, you go, wow, that's amazing. Now I have a whole different understanding of that event. You know what I mean? It's just a totally different meaning to the same thing that you know, we were already aware of occurred. It's just that it has a different meaning once we know the other side of the story, so to speak. Peter, anything from you?
As we're going through this story, I was reminded of a few different things. One of the things that Justin had mentioned, or you had mentioned, Scott, was my comments when I joined Amway and was being given these tools that I would say, you know, there's really not much value here. And by comparison to other things that I could buy, these things are super expensive, and they're the same stories over and over. So that kind of echoes what Justin had mentioned as well. So my background was in direct sales, and I was used to investing in my own head. I learned a formula that was provided to me by someone, I don't remember, but basically they always said take 3% of your income and reinvest it back into yourself as far as learning and education and seminars. So if you wanted to make $100,000 a year, you know, you'd have to spend $3,000 a year on training stuff. So whether it's books, tapes, functions, seminars, whatever. So spending money wasn't the issue. When I joined Amway, I was given these tapes, and I got to buy four or five of these and four or five of these. Like, they're the same story. And the stories are so fluffy. They're about rags to riches, about you got to have a why, you have a big dream. I'm like, well, when do we get into actually knowledge? Like, selling something, or like practical knowledge, like how do you sponsor someone, or practical knowledge, like what's different between this detergent and the other detergent. When do we get into that? Like, I want to buy those things. I don't want to buy another, you know, Kentucky woman and man who were broke, living in a trailer, singing country music songs, and now all of a sudden they're flying in Learjet. But I think you know what I mean. And I said, this is crazy. So the tools themselves were of, in my opinion, low quality for training. Now, the books were really a prop. They were a prop. It was like the candy that the guy in the van buys who's trying to rip off your kid. So the candy was good. He's buying Snickers or Twizzlers or whatever kids might like. And that was the prop that was necessary to get the kid close to the van so they could abduct the kid. And I'd say, that's slimy. I mean, that is really slimy. You're using people's books like Think and Grow Rich. I don't think Napoleon Hill really had a tool scam in his mind when he was thinking about that. And I'll throw some people under the bus in just a second, but let's go for people like Robert Kiyosaki. Robert Kiyosaki hated MLM. Hated MLM before he realized how many books MLMers buy. He thought MLM was a scam until they started buying what? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, I love this stuff. I'll speak at every one of their events. So what a lot of people also don't realize is that people like, you know, I'm going to use the absolute pathetic example of Grant Cardone. Oh, my God. By comparison, if you ever bring in Grant Cardone or you let Grant Cardone speak, by comparison, where you could have had somebody of class, of real education, of real integrity speak, you're a fool. I'll just say it like that. That guy's a whore. That guy is a whore. He is a con man. He is misleading. He lies. I have personal firsthand experience of people that have used him. And yet this industry has a blind spot. Robert Kiyosaki. I'm like, oh, my God, can't you find anybody better? Well, then there's people like Grant Cardone. Oh, my God, can't you find anybody better? Seriously. So anyway, there's my little rants about those things. And then another thing that those people, a lot of people just don't realize, and you got to watch, Scott, I know we introduced this on one of our radio shows. You have to watch the movie 8 Days. So for some people might say, I've never heard of that one before. It's a little unknown movie. You could probably find it on wherever you can find movies. It's 8 Days. It was about a young girl who went to a party, who was abducted, who became a victim of a slave sex trade for 8 days. And you say, what the hell do you want me to watch that movie for? And I'd say, you watch the movie. I don't care if you have to watch it a couple of times. Then strip out the story as far as the details. Strip out the girl. Strip out the party. Strip out the whatever. And look for the business model. Look for the business model associated with that example. And you'd say, okay. And I'll give you the punchline in advance. It was a well-meaning friend who really wasn't a well-meaning friend who invited a young girl, very innocent, to come to a party to meet a mentor. And the mentor, the girl that invited the young girl, the naive one, said, oh, I can't drop you home. This other guy, he's going to pass by your area. Let him drop you off. And the young girl was enamored by the superstar. And the superstar wasn't really a superstar. He wound up driving her past her exit and wound up selling her into a sex slave environment. And you'd say, what does it have to do with MLM? Well, we had some well-meaning people, maybe, I'm not sure, bring some innocent people into some environment where they're taken advantage of. And you knew that if the guy said, listen, I'm a sex slave trader, I'm going to take you and I'm going to sell you into this for 8 days until you finally escape, or maybe 14 years, or maybe you'll just commit suicide because you had sex 20 times a day, you'd say, what does that have to do with MLM? And then you'd just say, well, take a look at the business model. We get nice people to come to meetings. We wind up selling them all of our stuff. They wind up bringing their friends. Sometimes it's their mom. Sometimes there are other people that buy products. They're buying these books. We're making money, all this stuff. And it is almost exactly the same business model. And, Scott, like, for instance, I can tell you Justin never, ever thought about any similarities that he was a victim of to the sex slave operation. But if he watches that movie and then he gets it. Like, you have to be able to watch the movie, and then you kind of get it. So you have to have a little bit of a complex and an abstract mind. And you'd say, oh, my God, I see the connection. They got me to get those 20 people in here. They used me to get those 20 people in here so they could sell them all the books, tapes, and functions. How ingenious in an evil way. So I know that the stories are very similar that we've had here as far as guests are concerned, but the business model is evil. It's an evil business model in MLM when it's done this way. It's a very evil business model in the seminar business, because what they do is Grant Cardone will have access to all you people. He will then sell you guys something, or you'll believe that he's good. Then you'll get sucked into his next seminar, his next bullshit, his next bullshit, and he will ride you like Seabiscuit, for those people that remember that story, until he sucks you dry of all of your funds. And by the time you're dumb and broken, dumb meaning you listen to the fucking guy, you listen to his bullshit. His 10X stuff, his 10X seminar is as original as fucking blind, like plain vanilla Cheerios. Like, what the hell? There's nothing that is unique about this. People have been talking 10X stuff forever, and you think you're unique. You're not only a con man, you're a stupid con man. You can't even come up with anything original, you dumb fuck. So for those people that follow him, it's insanely crazy. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I have friends that are in the finance business that finance the $30,000 you'll spend on a blah, 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 blah seminar. crazy. It's insane. But the seminar business is dirty. The MLM business, like you're talking about with Amway and this tool scam, is dirty. And you'd say, is there anything good from that? I'm like, of course. If you read Think and Grow Rich, and you would have never been exposed to Think and Grow Rich before, because you're a bartender, like let's use Justin, you're a bartender. You're not reading Think and Grow Rich. As a rule, they don't teach you that in bartending school, I don't think, you know, unless it's a good bartending school, but they're not teaching you Think and Grow Rich. They're not teaching you the stuff that you need to know about making money. So sure, if you're exposed to those things as a result of being exposed to these scams, then yeah, you can pull something good out of poop if you search hard enough. I mean, so the realization is that's my little rant, Scott. So those are the things I was thinking of as I was listening to Justin talk about the things that he was going through. And just to kind of, if you will, expose people to the insidious nature of the tools scam in not only MLM, but also in the self-development world. So back to you, Scott. And Justin, if you have to, if you want to add anything to that, you certainly can.
Yeah, that's a good rant. And I just want to remind everybody that myself, I believe Peter, are not anti-MLM or pro-MLM. We're pro-MLM when it's done right. We're anti-MLM when it's done wrong, which makes both extreme, you know, positions dislike us. And again, you know, my definition of doing MLM right is real retail sales, not these fake ones that we were all taught how to do, and also having transparency on the amount of money being made from the tools. That's it. Those are the two big rocks that are getting in the way of having legitimate MLMs. So if those two things were followed, not that MLMs would be perfect if you got rid of those two things, but no business, MLM or non-MLM, is perfect. And so all we're trying to do is point out the big things to say, hey, these are two very large issues. There are a lot of other issues as well. I acknowledge that. But they're nowhere near as significant as these two things, the retail sales and the tool scams. Those are the two big things that really need to get fixed. But that's kind of, I'm pretty sure that's where Peter and I both come down pretty solidly together as far as what's a good MLM and what's a bad MLM. And so I guess you heard Peter's rant there. Justin, did you have any comments?
No, you know, as he was talking about the 8-day movie, you know, I did draw very much comparisons to my experience, or, you know, being in the business with, you know, kind of just the gist of the movie. And it was kind of, I don't want to say funny, but, you know, very eye-opening to, you know, to see
the
comparison.
The movie, if you want to find it, it's the number 8. And then days, 8 days. And a few years ago now, I guess it's been, Peter, it's been a while, we had the actress who played the mother of the girl in the movie on the show. And she was telling us this story as they were making the movie, that they had a room in a seedy hotel reserved for one of the scenes, right? And at the last minute, the hotel owner said, you know, I know I said you could shoot your scene here, but I just don't feel comfortable doing it because, you know, it might hurt the reputation of the hotel and so forth. So you're going to have to find another place to go. And so they did. Now, this is real life, not movie. So they did. They found another hotel. They said, yeah, you can do it here. And this particular scene included the local police and the real SWAT team, you know, real guys with real weapons and training, and, you know, they were the real deal, and they were part of the movie. Well, they're about to shoot this scene by going into this room that they had just reserved, and they got a call on their radio saying, hey, we've got a real deal. You know, you guys need to take a break in your movie for a second. We have a real thing going on. It happened to be in the room directly next to the room that they were going to be shooting the movie scene. And it was a real thing where, like Peter was talking about, it was some girl or woman, you know, that was drugged up and she was being used as a sex slave. So the SWAT team moved over one room, went in, took care of business, came back out, and they shot the movie scene. That blew my mind. That's way beyond, you know, what you can imagine. But that was the story that she told us. And she was really just an actress before she got involved in this movie. But then she became more involved in all of these sex slave and trafficking activities going on. It made a profound impact on her as an actress to where she actually got more involved in that whole area after the movie was made. So, yeah, that was another incredible show that, you know, it was just mind-blowing. And the parallels between just an innocent invitation to a party, just like I'm sure both of us, all of us, innocently invited people to an Amway meeting, not realizing what was really going on, you know, behind the scenes. It was really, really a good parallel. And Peter, thanks for bringing it up, because that was really a tremendous show that we did. So, Justin, I guess we're getting towards the end of our time here. I like to ask our guests before we end, was there anything that you were thinking of before the show or you thought of during the show that we haven't talked about yet that you'd like to expand upon? And maybe we can even have you back to do a deeper dive into what happened with Judd and Kara Ayers and get your impression on that, because we touched on it a little bit, but I think this is going to be a very significant story moving forward, you know, as far as LTD and Amway. It's only getting started. And if you want to come back sometime, we'd love to have you kind of expand on some of those details of what's going on with that whole thing. But anyway, we only have a few more minutes, so you can't get into it real deep right now. But was there anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap it up?
No, had a good time with talking with you guys. I appreciate your guys' time and, you know, inviting me on the show. For the most part, you know, I mean, I touched on pretty much my experience, you know, for the most part, you know, with Amway. And, if you guys want to do another show and maybe, you know, like you said, dig deeper into a couple things, you know, I'd definitely be, you know, down for that as well.
Yeah, because I really do think this is going to be a bigger story with what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Because they're going forward. I mean, they're doing lawsuits. They're doing all kinds of stuff. And I think it's going to make the news at some point. You know, the real news, not just us guys in the background talking about it on some obscure podcast. It's going to be the real deal. And I'll give you my position on the stuff that they bring up. You know, all the stuff like the what's that organization? The secret society organization. Do you know what I'm talking about there? It's like the 33rd order, or whatever. I can't think of it.
Illuminati.
Freemasons?
Yeah, he's very Judd is very much against Freemasons. He thinks there's a lot of evil going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. I don't really have an opinion on it. But he has a lot of information and about a lot of evil stuff going on and a lot of questions. You know, he hasn't really accused anybody of anything specifically. He's just called out, hey, there's some really interesting coincidences here.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of stories going around. And my take on that is, I don't know if it's true or not, but where I come down on it is, what if all of the money being made by Amway, whether it's the corporation or, you know, these upline on the tools and the Amway stuff, what if all of that money was being given to a legitimate, you know, a perfectly honest you know, legitimate charity, and it was all on the up and up, and it was just great as far as where the money was going. It would still be an evil situation because, again, going back to the tool scam and the retail sales, all that money is ill-gotten. And so no matter what you do with it, it's ill-gotten. And, you know, just stop right there and I'm not telling him to stop. I'm just saying if you stop right there, it's still a really bad situation. And by the way, a lot of these people do like to give some of their money to charities and so forth, again, to make themselves look like they're good guys. You know, they have credibility. You know, you get all caught up in the Christian stuff. Maybe that's another thing we can talk about on another show, because I'm sure you were exposed to that at the functions. That's a whole other line of you know, discussion. And my opinion on that is these guys are just, you know, the most fake religious, quote-unquote religious people I've ever seen. Because I don't have a problem with religion either. I'm a Christian myself. But the way that they put that in front of them to make themselves look like they're really good people when they're just big liars and cheats, it just really galls me, you know, to think that they're misusing religion like that. So anyway, Justin, this has been a great show too. I can't believe an hour and a half has gone by. It's just flown by so fast. I just wanted to thank you again for coming on, and let's stay in touch. We'll have you back again sometime. I'd like to do a deeper dive into some of those other areas. And Peter, I'll hand it back to you, and we can close it out and get back together next Saturday.
Well, good stuff. For those people listening in, thanks for being here. If you go back to buildingfortressradio.com/Scott-Johnson, you'll be able to hear this as well as the previous radio show. Justin, thanks for being here. And if you come back, if you're so inclined, and then you watch that movie, 8 Days, which, by the way, I think it was produced by Jaco Bouyens. Jaco is J-A-C-O. Bouyens is B-O-O-Y-E-N-S. You can watch some interviews about him as well. So Jaco Bouyens, 8 Days. If you watch that movie and then you come back and you say, you know what, Peter, I can see the specific comparisons to what happened with me and what's happening even still today, that'll be really insightful. So I know you weren't thinking about it before this radio show, but after you watch that movie and then you come back, you might be able to give us some of the connections. But we're here every Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 on the Central side. This was an earlier radio show because of the time frame where our guests needed it, and we're going to catch everybody next week on Building Fortress Radio. Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you next time. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Scott.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.